My name is Mark Schwain, and the title of this session, as advertised, is Violence on Television, but the full title is really Violence on Television, semicolon, Violence in Society. Up here with me are two folks who are on the teaching staff here at Holden. To my left, Annette Stixrud, and to my right, Glenn Gershmail. And they will be speaking briefly in just a moment. I just want to say a few things about forums here at Holden, because though many of you are regulars or have been to at least one other forum, some of you are new. I should say that I am quite literally a guest moderator here this evening. That is to say, I'm a guest here in the village now, having retired from my faculty status of the prior 2 weeks, and now I'm a guest, and I'm a moderator, making me a guest moderator. I should say that forums are really the chance for the Holden community to think together and talk together about some question or about some topic or about some issue, with the hope that everyone leaves not with any resolution, but with some deeper understanding of just what it was we all started to think through together. So it's not a debate, and it's certainly not a monologue, so I'll confine my remarks to 30 more seconds. I just want to invite all of you to feel free to speak. I'm here just to call on you and to kind of keep the conversation moving. And I guess one way to focus it a little more before we ask Annette and Glenn to get us started is to say that the full title, as I said, is Violence on Television, semicolon, Violence in Society. And in a way, what we'll be exploring is just exactly what that semicolon means. That is, are we talking about two things that are violence on television, violence in society, stemming from some common cause out there, or are they kind of causally connected, or are they just coincidences that there's violence on television and violence in society? What's the nature of the connection there between what we see on television and what happens in our community? So that's kind of the question. Followed up, if there's time, and I think there will be, by some conversation about what we can do about this whole business. So I won't say anything more, and I'll just call on each of our panelists to say a few words, and then the floor will be open. So, Annette?
Thank you. I have become very concerned about the problem of violence in our society when I heard a hospital, the head of the Catholic Hospital Association, Larry Seidel, say that in the 1880s, the main cause of death were environmental diseases. This is water supplies, lack of immunization. In the 1980s are lifestyle diseases. And in 2010, the number one cause of death will be violence. Well, as coordinator of a parish nurse ministry, I guess I felt that this was one area we really needed to educate ourselves as much as possible. And so I started, we had a conference last fall on the whole issue of violence. And I find that I've been inundated with materials, but I'm really happy to come up to Holden and meet Glenn and find out how much he has to add, because he's been thinking through these issues for a long time. I'm kind of a newcomer to this area, and I guess I am completely overwhelmed by it, because I have people that will make a comment to me like, well, no one better take away my gun, because then that takes away my freedom. Well, I've lived in three different countries. I've lived in East Africa, in India, and in the Middle East. And those are the countries where I was truly free to walk any time of the day or night and never feel like anyone was going to shoot at me, or, you know, pull a gun out, or, you know, I always felt I was very safe. And I guess my reply has been, you know, I think you lost your freedom a long time ago and you don't know it. Because there's far more violence in this country than what we have been aware of. But then I came across something called Media and Values. Have any of you read the magazine Media and Values? They have now put out three kits. One is, and they're all about beyond blame. And it's talking about television in this country and saying that for 40 years we've been going around in circles asking the wrong question. We've been asking the question, who's to blame for this? And we have to quit asking that question and start doing something. And I guess this particular statement has hit me far more than any other. A child today is born into a home in which television is on an average of over 7 hours a day. For the first time in human history, most of the stories about people, life, and values are told not by parents, schools, churches, or others in the community who have something to tell, but by a group of distant conglomerates that have something to sell. And I think with that, I'll turn it over to Glenn.
Thank you. Glenn?
I'm just going to say a word about my sort of what I bring to this, or for myself as well as perhaps for us. I spent an overlapping, sort of like 14 years of my life working with the elderly from about 1971 to 86. And in New York City and Oakland primarily, and primarily in the poorer areas. In fact, I was a social worker for more than a year in the highest crime precinct in New York City in the South Bronx. And that overlapped with, in the early 80s, my moving back into international issues, primarily at the behest of some national senior citizen organizations that wanted me to do some work on the military, or on the budget, and it was mostly the military budget in those years. And so when I went back to graduate school, my concentration was on international security. People joke about my having a degree in war to work for peace. And although I did take poverty and public policy and several related kinds of courses, and I wrote an article this last year, or a year and a half ago, 2 years ago now, for the largest newsletter of peace educators. And it was really one of the most satisfying things to have 3 weeks later the National Association of Social Workers call me up and ask me if they could reprint the article, and they both used it as the lead article. Because it was exactly what I was trying to do, to try to connect those two parts of my life, but also some two realities. And I thought I would just share the four-sentence opening anecdote and then put the ball out into the table here. A physician friend recently shared a sobering bit of news. The emergency room staff at his hospital had received training from two experienced Army medics on coping with the severe gunshot wounds that are showing up in their ER with growing frequency. A news article underscored the point a month later with a report that the military is sending its medics in training to urban hospitals to gain experience in handling battlefield trauma. One of the statistics there's probably most of you have seen in one form or another is the one on the board. 1990, handguns were used to kill 10 people in Australia, 13 in Sweden, 22 in Great Britain, 68 in Canada, 87 in Japan, 91 in Switzerland, and, 10,567 in the United States. And to sort of go past one of the questions that is always raised, like, well, aren't those countries different sizes? With a little bit of mathematical assistance, we've computed that in terms of how many that is per 100,000 population, roughly. So at that point, you want to restate the question?
Okay, sure. Thank you. We've heard from Annette the closing comment that for the first time in human history, given that television sets are on an average of 7 hours in the homes where they are, the people, churches, parents, others who told stories and had something to tell have been displaced by distant conglomerates that have something to sell. And we've heard from Glenn very sobering statistical evidence and other comments about the increasing violence in our society. And Annette mentioned, too, in her opening statement that by the year 2010, most deaths will, in this country, come from violence. And the question really then is for us to ponder together, just what are the connections here between the fact that our children and we ourselves, for that matter, are subjected to these conglomerates that have something to sell, and the fact that there's an increasing curve of violence in our society. So let's hear from some of you folks. Experiences, observations, thoughts?
I think we also need to look at types of violence, because there are different ways that violence is used in society, that not only a true attack or harm on a person, there's also the subtle underlying violence that is done within people in the United States through their cultural and ethnic background that is used within people within even the United States alone.
So there are many forms of violence beyond just the kind inflicted by handguns and that does physical harm. Mm-hmm. Yes?
I think it's, Tim, when you look at what we're going to do about this, I think we really have to seriously look at the causes. And or else it's going to be a hopeless battle. And it's kind of, I mean, there's certainly a television and the presence of handguns in families when people get mad at each other is a problem that I think is apparent to all of us. But a few years ago, I heard William Sloan Coffin say that peace was not the absence of violence. It was the presence of justice. And when you look at those other countries that have relatively low handgun death rates, I have the general feeling that in most of those countries, most people probably feel that they're treated a little more justly than they do here. And when you look around the world, in places like the Middle East, where there's a lot of military to try to keep the peace, in places like El Salvador, Guatemala, Haiti, where it takes a lot of military and firepower to maintain the peace, they really don't have peace. They actually have more violence. And when you look at cities in our country like, say, Chelan, Washington, compared to inner city Detroit, the difference in the violence is probably has a lot to do with the fact that people in Chelan generally feel like they're getting a better deal in life than a lot of people in inner city Detroit. And I don't think we're going to be able to deal with this until we deal with justice issues.
Is this in a way saying that the focus on the media, as we're doing this evening, is one that is all right, but in a sense missing the major underlying root cause, perhaps, of both the violence in society and the violence on the media?
Well, I think the media kind of reflects what's going on in society. And I think that I kind of doubt that the media is the problem. I think society is the problem.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. So there's one formulation that, in a sense, what we're getting in the media is more a reflection of what's going on in society, which is violence, which has roots in really kind of the injustice that is everywhere in our country. Yes?
I have a little piece to add to that. My sister-in-law works in one of the poorer outer-lying high schools in Atlanta, and it's a predominantly black school. And it is routine for the kids to carry handguns. And there's been several teachers who have been robbed and beaten and raped, and I mean, you name it, it goes on in the school. And the reason that the kids say that they carry the guns is basically because they don't feel safe anywhere without it. So I guess I kind of agree with what he said about the media as more of a reflection than it is in that particular scene.
So they're the underlying cause, the people's state, the reason they're carrying guns is that they just don't feel safe. There's a kind of fear that they themselves will be brutalized, so they carry guns to protect themselves. And that surely has to be connected up with some of the factors he was talking about. Yes?
Well, the argument between whether television is causative or just a reflection, there's probably some truth in both, because the counterexample is usually used as to whether or not what goes on television influences people was, I think they found a statistical correlation between when they removed advertisements for liquor and tobacco from television, that there might have been other factors at work, but there does seem to be some correlation between the behavior of the general public and what is seen on television. So I think it's not simply one or the other. It's pretty hard to figure out which.
Yes, Paul?
I think there's a correlation between, between television and the values it portrays, and the concerns for justice that you raised. William Foer and Neil Postman and others who've written about the problem of television have pointed out that television raises expectations of justice which are not available. You never see a courtroom drama in which the guilty person is not found guilty and always within an hour, or 2 hours if it's an introduction. My brother-in-law, who was a police official in Denver, hated the police shows on television because they raised totally unreal expectations as to what was even possible. What happens is that vast institutions in our culture that work imperfectly at best and often with agonizing slowness are portrayed in dramatic fashion in television, and justice is always delivered. Except that life is not that way. Now the correlate is that if you think it should be the way it's portrayed on television, and then it isn't in your experience, your frustration level rises to the breaking point, and the next step is violent action. Whether that's portrayed on television or not isn't even all that significant. It's the fictional portrayal. What one could go on, sitcoms are never like the Dick Van Dyke Show or Eight Is Enough or whatever. I mean, that dates me, I know, but every area of television is permeated by almost utter unreality. My memories go back to the early days of television, hate to say that, but they do, in which the realistic programs like Naked City or The Defenders, where the lawyers often lost cases, where one time Robert Reed had to go to Sing Sing to witness an execution, that was the stuff of the story, lasted a year or two and disappeared because they didn't sell, because they didn't grab viewer interest. Those were portrayals that worked in many ways the way drama, authentic drama, is supposed to work, to show us ourselves and to help us gain some insight. Television deceives from the word go, and I think thus raises the level of violence by the false justice that it portrays and which our society does not deliver. Whether it can or not is, of course, another question.
Okay, so we have a kind of supplement or a corollary to the hypothesis originally put forward, which is that the root causes of violence in our society are social, having to do with injustice, but that the media, particular television, tends to accelerate the violence by presenting us with dangerous fictions, leading people to expect that violence will be, that justice will be swift, sure, and certain, when, as a matter of fact, it isn't. And this, in turn, leads people to be frustrated. So let's see. Your hand, yes.
Just to follow up with what you said, I think, and also what was said earlier about violence, I think it's important. It's not just physical, but I mean discrimination. I mean, anytime you don't respect a person for their humanity and their individuality, whether it be stereotyping, discrimination, sexism, whatever, I mean, there's so many different forms of violence. And that, in terms of television shows, I always thought it was interesting to think about, you know, what shows of America go to overseas, and to think that people think that the United States is Dallas and Roseanne and any other number of shows you could think of, mm-hmm. that's what they think American life is. And we're here and we watch it and we go, well, that's not really real. But think about what we, you know, what is embodied in those shows, and aren't we at times embarrassed by it? And aren't there subtle and not so subtle stereotyping of children, elderly, women, minority, I mean, all over the world, where we're diminishing what, you know, these groups of people are and what they represent and what they bring to this world.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All these things bring a lot of things to mind to me, so I hope I'm not getting it too scattered, but I appreciated the first thing you said, or towards the end, I guess, about storytelling coming from, you said conglomerates, and that sounded evil and everything, but what it is coming from strangers. I think the problem is not the violence, that's the outcome of something internal that's going wrong. You see what I'm saying? I'm not saying that violence is not terrible, but what's going wrong, what's happening, I think, is an internal sadness or something. I don't know what it is, but it stems from inside. And if the storytelling and the things that I think make us whole human beings is not coming from parents and grandparents and neighbors, then we don't feel connection to people. And when you don't feel a connection to people, then you don't feel responsible for them. And you don't feel that you need to help other people. And I think personally, when you look at the list of names of countries, I think the reason that the United States has that many killings, and we probably have way more abuse cases and a lot of other kinds of violence, is because we stress so much independence in this country. I think it's a root from, let's all be independent, and somehow we then value individuality and separateness, and we put emphasis on power, or power goes to the people who are most independent, and we value that and we stress it. People who are dependent on others, we see as weak. And I think that, so therefore, I think that the United States, who stresses that so much, has gone out, it's gone overboard. And as we stress more and more independence and more power in individuality, we lose connection with each other. And so we don't value each other and respect each other. And from that, we don't trust each other. And we wonder what he's maybe thinking and what he's going to do to me. And then maybe I better carry a gun in case he's going to do something to me. You see, I just think, what she used the word independence in your statement. And the first thing I thought of was when I used to work with developmentally disabled people, we didn't stress independence in the way that I think we talk about in the United States. We stress dependence. If a person can be dependent on 100 people, just think how independent they are. If you have a banker and a grocer and a neighbor and a father and, you know, if you are dependent on many, many people, then you're cared for, and then you can care for others. Do you see what I'm saying? And the more that we stress just individuality and independence and isolation, I think it's the more dangerous it becomes, and it promotes some of this mistrust.
Okay, so there's another way in which to pick up and connect your comment to some others, that you think the media tends to accelerate the violence whose roots are social, finally. What's been mentioned is inflating expectations about justice, and now you're suggesting the alienation produced by the fact that our stories that shape a lot of our children are told by strangers.
By strangers and by an inanimate object. And purely entertainment kind of zeroed, you know, so it's not just even the message that there's a lot of fighting on this police show. Mm-hmm. It's not just the content, it's the method and the removal. 7 hours of staring at something doesn't connect you to your neighbor and make you trust that person and respect that person.
Good, thank you. Glenn, you were going to say.
I'm going to just make a sort of a process nudge, maybe to remind us of the importance of the issue that we're wrestling with. And I guess I think of people, beautiful, wonderful senior citizens who had their faces smashed by someone that was just looking for a few dollars in their pocketbook on the one hand, and a process thought on the other, that I propose a hypothesis that you carry around for the next months or whatever till you decide whether it's useful or not. And that hypothesis is to be suspect of any conclusion that results in, I can best express it physically, that is, that leaves you feeling either hopeless or that there isn't anything there or that you can walk away from something. That I think that this is the kind of question that it is really important for us to decide to engage until we find out what we ought to do, or at least a provisional what we ought to do, and go do it, and then on the basis of that maybe fine-tune it or change it or whatever, but that we take responsibility for this problem in whichever direction it leads, you know, whatever truth, you know, we come to the point where we act, that we take responsibility for it. So,
thanks.
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to add that because television promotes consumerism, that to me is an underlying cause of violence, you know, because the unequal distribution of resources and then the values that it promotes that people can never attain. And then the commercialism, you know, buy, 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 buy. And I just heard a speaker, Dwayne Elgin, he wrote Voluntary Simplicity. I heard him 2 weeks ago, and he's in San Francisco, and he said he was three shows about the environment he saw in 1 year in a station he was monitoring in San Francisco. And he thought that we should start having commercials for the environment, you know, for every commercial that's to buy something, because he says that television or public television or television in general, they're supposed to serve us, the people, and that we are not making them responsible for what they're showing, and that we need to do something about it.
Okay, there were a couple of hands back there, and then I think we'll. Anybody want to? Or have? I think we're going to shift after the hearing from the two of you into more of the mode of, given the kind of analysis we've got on the table, what are some of the things we might do? So if you want to start on that or just make some comments.
No, I just had one.
Fine.
I mean, we're all drawing sort of from our own place where we're coming from, and I come from a place where I've worked with addictions, and I have seen, and being a recovering person myself, I have seen the damage that the drug culture and addictions do to lives, and the violence that they cause in lives, in individual lives, in family lives, in culture, in our culture. What the drug industry, the drug culture is doing to our entire, you know, culture and the world. I think that much of our violence is related to that, and that is much more than just a solve this problem, because it's a moral, it has to do with evil, you know, and what we can do about that, because I do something about drugs and their impact on the cities and on handguns. That is at least one dimension of the whole problem. in addition to injustice and everything else that we've made.
Okay. Yes.
I was going to say basically the same thing, but I think many of these 10,000 people that you had up there on the border are the result of drug deals going bad. And there are people within a community of, you know, drug dealers who, you know, somebody got, you know, taken advantage of, or it was a drug deal going bad. And I live in a community of about 250,000 total, but really it's 12 little towns all put together, the Quad Cities. And we have had any number of drive-by shootings and murders.
Yeah.
You wouldn't expect it in a place like this. 10 years ago, it wasn't there. It's there now. And many of them, most of them, are drug dealers.
Yes, a comment from up on top.
I just think it's interesting that I live in the middle of Chicago and work in the city and teach about the city. And I've seen a couple of shows lately, anthropology shows on public TV, where people talk about death and death in other cultures and faraway places and distant times and historical death and the way people used to do death. And what I'm finding now in among people that I talk to who are, say, in the drug culture and who are poor and disenfranchised people in the middle of the city is that there's a new thing happening there. There's a new capacity growing, which is that the children and the teenagers and the young adults there have interesting and profound and hopeless ideas about death that I think we need to mine, we need to learn from them, because death is so prevalent from violence in those communities that they somehow have had to come to grips with it in a way that the rest of us are insulated from. We don't see dead bodies, we don't figure out how to bury the dead. I mean, death is so foreign to us. It's not part of our lives, and in a way that's probably pretty sick. We don't know about death. And so there's a resource in our culture, in our time, among us, because of the drug culture, because of handguns, and because of the violence of poverty and hopelessness, that is very striking to me, that you know, these young folks really know a lot about death.
Hmm. Do you have a thought yourself on this matter of the media and its role in the amount of violence in our society?
I like the comment from down here that when people who are poor and feel hopeless and out of control see a different kind of life in the media, I think it increases the discontinuity between their life and some other kind of life, increases their sense of anger and hopelessness, and so that they are more likely to give up and assume death is better than lots of the alternatives that they...
Okay, so we've had then, this last comment gives us at least a third way, a third respect in which the media, especially television, tend to accelerate what's already a deeply rooted problem, and we've heard of multiple accounts of the many roots of violence in our society that are captured by the word injustice, which was offered first. But we've heard a number of accounts of how the media tends to accelerate this problem. And I think we ought to spend some time puzzling out what we as citizens might do about this media. That's our topic tonight. Granted that if we solve the media problem, we'll still have the violence problem because its roots are deeper than the media. We all, I think, have come to that collective insight. But what about the media now? We've had a couple of suggestions emerge en passant. One, that we ought to be involved more in some ways to turn the media to our collective social advantage. And another one was one that was made in my session last week that was only half facetious, and I think it may have been from Walt or someone else who said the early Christians in the ancient world, when they were baptized, part of that ritual was that they smashed the idols that they had worshipped up until that time, and that we ought to require Christians today, as they're baptized, to smash their television set. So I think that's already one suggestion we've had.
With a gun.
With a gun, yeah.
All right.
And since it was Glenn who urged us to think in practical terms, he just wants to make a couple of suggestions to complicate this spectrum of ideas, and then we'll open it up
again. By way of transition, as someone who's had a fair amount of social science training, attempting to establish the link between television and violence in the street, the more you look at it, or the more you read studies on it, the more complicated it is. I mean, it is, in fact, I'd be willing to say it is impossible to really establish a causal relationship between the two in a social, scientifically responsible way. But having said that, there's approximately 4,000 studies that have been done attempting to like look at some piece of it. For example, watching children through, you know, the mirror, you know, room where they watch television and then watch them play and over and over and over again with different kinds of television programs. There's a lot of different techniques that have been used. And you read those, and there's a group based in Illinois that produces a newsletter that will summarize in just a paragraph or two, a long, tiny print paragraph, I should say, but in really a kind of a respectable, academically respectable fashion, this research. And you read this month after month, or read the compilations, or go back over the newsletters, and it's really kind of stunning how much they've been able to sort of carve out in the way of truth. I'll share one more really, I think, really fascinating story. There's a town in the Southwest that is hemmed in by mountains so that forever it has not been able to get television by antenna. And the town was wired by a group of marketing folks so that everybody has had cable for like decades. And the price for getting free television in your home was to basically have given them permission to do countless studies where half the homes will get one version of a Coca-Cola ad and the other half will get another version, et cetera. And so I share that as just a different kind of an example of the wealth of work that's been done that has, I think, demonstrated really remarkable insight into some very, very strong correlations, very strong causal kinds of relationships between media and violence. But ultimately, the other factors that we've raised here are really important too, and it's going to be really hard to try to, you know, have something definitive enough to prove to the skeptic that there's a correlation. But I'm persuaded that there's enough for us to act on some form of a correlation. So,
okay. So, what should we do, Anne?
First thing that I would like to hear is a definition of the media, because we're in a looking at this, and I keep hearing us talk about entertainment media, and I would like not to confuse the methodology with the content, because television carries not only sitcoms and entertainment and so-called entertainment and all kinds of other things, but it also is a method for delivering what we call the news. And whether or not we believe what we hear and see, that is delivered and is not tied to advertising dollars. And so if we choose to change that by way of advertising dollars, which is one of the things I heard alluded to, that simply won't happen. But if we look at television as a methodology or a delivery medium, and then we look at the printed word and say we have fiction there and we have newspapers there, for my purposes, it would be useful for me to know whether or not we're dividing those out, or we're saying we don't believe anything on television, or we don't believe any stuff we get in newspapers, or the fiction versus nonfiction. It would just be useful because from my perspective as a former reporter, in my head, I'm dividing them out, and I'm saying they're not talking about the news. They're not talking about straight news. But maybe you are. So for my purposes, I would like to hear that definition before we go any further.
Yeah, I think that my understanding of where we are at this point is that we've simply honed in on television rather than the whole panoply of media.
But television what?
And I think that what people have been referring to is the amount of violence portrayed, especially in the made-for-TV movie, the regular television drama series, the kinds of movies that the movie channels choose to show, et cetera, et cetera. I think that people who have spoken have, at least the examples offered up, is that kind of thing, because they've talked about fictional, Walt mentioned fictional presentations and so on. And I think the question really then becomes, given that there is a surfeit of violence on television, and television has these other problems, rising expectations that people can't possibly gratify, the idea that justice is simple, sure, and swift, when it's not, in fact, all of those things, I think the question is, what can the public do about the media, in particular television, and its connection to violence? Yes.
Well, I think I, for one, was thinking primarily of what we refer to as prime time or children's cartoon type things. But on the other hand, news is not free from the commercial enterprise, and how what we call news is displayed. They worry about sweeps week as well, and portray news in a graphic way that will grab viewers, because they count the people that view the news as well as they do the people that view Roseanne, and it's a commercial enterprise.
The line is getting blurred between the two.
Yeah,
even if we choose to agree with that definition, and I would, dramas and children's television, as you mentioned. That doesn't mean you can't bring in the others to the degree they're relevant.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You're talking a little bit tongue-in-cheek about smashing the televisions as a practical means to accomplish this. I was wondering if anyone had heard any of the outcomes that was being done by Toys R Us, and I can't remember the other. The kids bring in the guns and the handguns, and it's exchanged for dollars.
It's $100 a gun.
Pardon me?
It's $100 a gun.
Yeah.
A certificate for $100.
Yeah, I just wondered what happened. I know the program
that,
is still running, it's still going, and
is that real?
It was done around.
There's one more different.
Do you know?
Yeah, it was done around the holiday season as a way for some people to have money to buy their kids Christmas gifts. So they offered certificates in exchange for guns.
Were they real guns?
Yes.
Yeah.
I read something recently where children could bring in toy guns to a store like Toys R Us or something. And is that what you were referring to?
I just wondered if there was anybody watched to see if anything happened as a result of this little experience.
What happened as a result of it is that more people showed up with guns than they had for the campaign. In other words, when you do a coupon campaign, you have so much that you're going to invest in that. And in a couple cases, they went way over what they had planned. So it was a highly successful one time, one event, tied to some kind of, and it created enormous goodwill in terms of that particular marketing campaign. Now, some cities have done similar things, like giving kids a trip to the local amusement park in exchange for guns with no strings attached. Mm-hmm. They had an issue with how, you know, you said one gun per family, I guess.
I don't know the answer to that question, but there are two thoughts that I have. One is that the folks in Minneapolis that are doing the big artistic display for the churchwide assembly and festival are building a sculpture, a gigantic sculpture, like to fill a room this size, out of toy guns and weapons. And if you have any that, or can get any from your congregation and send them in by, you know, middle of July or so, there's a phone number in the LPF newsletter of how you can do it. And then secondly, I think that campaign is evidence of how powerful we can be if we choose to, you know, to act in the world. You don't need the majority of the population to get the changes happening. I mean, here's a corporation whose eye is, I believe, primarily on the bottom line, but who sees an opportunity to sort of get some attention and to put themselves out there. There may very well have been some, you know, moral thinking going into it, but I would predict that from the outside this is, that it was primarily a kind of a positioning themselves consideration, that that we have made an issue already enough of what we're talking about here for, you know, some people to try to, you know, make some big changes, to try some campaigns that really are moving us in the right direction.
Okay, hopefully. Ingrid, and then down here, yes.
I just wanted to add, in response to your question about what do we mean by television, that we need to look at the ads. And those of us who have done any work in teaching women's studies know that the film, Still Killing Us Softly, or Killing Us Softly, which is out of Harvard, that depicts very graphically how ads, normal ads for clothes and lingerie and cars and vitamins and everything, are often built on violence, particularly violence against women. And they're terrifying. You don't see it until you see this film or something like it that sort of raises your consciousness. But then you start looking at television ads, and it just turns your stomach. I mean, it's violence everywhere, and they sell stuff through violence, and somehow violence does seem to appeal to people. And particularly violence against women is really very rampant in television ads.
Yes.
You're asking the question of what can we do about violence in the media? That's the question.
Especially television.
Especially television. And we as the community, or we as the church?
Both.
Both. Well, two things, and this gets back to this drug discussion. One is the question, the church has got to expose why we medicate ourselves. Drugs are here because people are medicating themselves. That's the first thing. So why are they medicating themselves? I'll have an answer to that, but I think the church needs to expose that. That's an issue. If people weren't medicating themselves, we wouldn't need drugs. The other issue is the church has got to hold up the other mirror, which the media tends to hold up, the mirror that seems to be the most palpable for people. Drugs are related to poor people. Drugs are related to black people. In the state of Minnesota, we have different sentencing guidelines depending on the kind of cocaine you're caught with. And I'm here to tell you, because I've been in both communities, that I believe there's just as much drug use going on in suburbs as they are in cities. You've just gotten real good at it. We have it delivered to your house, a black man shows up in a Mercedes and gives you what you need, you close your doors, and you do what you want to do, and you beat your wife. No one ever talks about that. And in the state of Minnesota, if you get caught with crack cocaine, you have one sentence, and if you get caught with powdered cocaine, you have another. Guess who doesn't get to go to jail? So I think that the church's job is to look underneath the drug thing and say, why are we being medicated? And every time the media presents half the picture, expose the other half. Because part of our issue is we don't look at the whole picture.
Okay, so one thing we can do is to, if the media gives us consistently distorted views, correct those through the church in particular, but other communities.
And not even so much distorted as in that they will give you half of it. I do not argue.
I understand.
Communities of color, we have significant issues of hopelessness and drugs. What I'm saying is that it's an American issue across socioeconomic bounds, and it's about the need to be medicated. We've got to ask ourselves a question. Why is it that we have to medicate ourselves with drugs by prescription, alcohol, and illegal uses of drugs? All of that's the same thing.
And 7 hours of television.
Another way that we do it.
Yes, Walt.
Long ago, when we first came to Holden, somebody came up here from Portland, and I don't remember who it was anymore, with a program called Television Awareness Training. And I don't know whatever happened to that program, but it was designed above all for parents and for distribution in churches. It was packaged, it was very nicely done. But it shaped in many ways the way we helped our children to try to deal with television. We limited, they could choose whatever programs they wanted, but they could only watch them when either Jan or I could watch with them, two a day. And then we had some techniques to demythologize what was going on. We played the Bill of Rights game. How many provisions of the Bill of Rights are being violated by this program? And it's astonishing. First of all, you have to go and look up the Bill of Rights.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then you begin to discover, just take illegal search and seizure as one.
Right.
If the good guys are doing it, nobody thinks that a provision of the Bill of Rights is being violated. We used to play the non sequitur game with commercials. What rules of logic are being violated by this particular commercial? What, in other words, what leaps are you being required to make to come to the conclusion that the commercial wants you to come to? Plot analysis. Who's the Messiah? We would ask in television dramas. It's remarkable how one can then learn to see through what's being done to you, so that you become you are in control of what's happening, rather than simply being a kind of passive victim of all that's being done. I think it's unrealistic to say you can just say no, or you can banish television, but I do think that it is then possible for us to do more managing, much more managing, of what's coming into our homes. I deplore above all the whole culture that is arising of seminarians writing papers with the television set on. Mm-hmm. I don't think one can really do justice to either, and I'm glad that they can't do justice to television, because I've assigned a paper, but I also worry about what happens to the quality of the work.
Okay, I think before we talk to you, there's one person who's been very patient here.
I think maybe part of it, like in reference to the news, is that we don't have enough positive news either. I mean, the headlines are always, you know, whether it's international, national, and sometimes local news too. It's always, you know, what murders have taken place, who was, you know, kidnapped. Those are always the highlights of the news. And I think kind of what you were saying, in order to represent the other half, we have to have the positive qualities and occurrences that take place in people's lives too. And if we present that quality of the positiveness, and we take that over to programs, like TV programs also, I think if we do that, then it doesn't have to be like, oh, this is an ideal that none of us can ever attain. But if we work together with that, and in educating people and saying, okay, now you have this kind of a life, and this is how you can attain this, you know, so it doesn't remain something that's out there that no one can have, but something that is perfectly accessible to everybody. You know, I think that, you know, someone mentioned before about how certain programs are too idealistic. You know, I think of, like, when I was growing up, Little House on the Prairie, that was a real big one, or, you know, the Disney show, you go. But I think that we have to remember that it's people just like us that created those programs. And I don't think they would have created them if they didn't have some hope within themselves that life could be like that. And that even though we're all going to have struggles, that you can have a community that does work together to go through those struggles. So I don't think those are necessarily shows to be tossed out either.
Thank you. I think we're ready for one last word. I think Annette wants to talk a little bit about some of the material she's brought in connection with what some of you folks have said, and then we'll wrap it up.
Okay. Well, I'm from Portland. I don't have the kit that you're talking about, but it sounds like something I want. But I do have this Beyond Blame, and this is one of three kits, actually. This is called the Town Hall version, where you show bits of what is actually shown on television, talking about the TV myths, talking about what watching television does to us. And I recently, they have one kit for high school students and adults, and I used it with a group of 80 7 high school students. And the whole point comes out to that it's media literacy that we really are aiming for, just like what you're saying. It sounds like you did it a little more creatively, and I'd like to hear that. But these students, part of their assignment was, like with the news, what was the first scene? What did they tell you would follow, and what were some of the words that were used in order to keep you from turning off your television set? And most of it did come out very sensationalized news. And so then I would ask them if they were aware of the housing problems in Portland or of justice issues. You know, these were things that they were looking for. The other thing is that they had to watch one movie and talk about, would that movie have any relevance if it didn't have violence in it? And what were the consequences of that violence? And did the bad guys have families? Which is really kind of an off-the-wall question. But they found out bad guys don't have families.
But the humans.
Yeah, right. So it was kind of a reflecting. And then after they had done that, they were to do that with another person. And it was interesting how many of them had done it with younger brothers and sisters at home and had found that they weren't too thrilled that younger brothers and sisters were watching this. But my friends have told me I've ruined television for them forever with this program. But I think more that they're just looking at it a little differently, like, do we need this? And I guess it troubles me when I think of kids watching as much television as they do. Does this lead to depression because they watch for so many hours? They're not getting the exercise they need. They're not being challenged intellectually the way they need to be challenged. And I think, you know, all of these things kind of come together in this Beyond Blame. And if anyone is interested in, it's an hour and a half, it's called the Town Hall Meeting. If any of you are interested, I would be willing to set up a time that you could watch it.
Great, thank you. One more word about resources.
There's really a wealth of good material working with young people about violence or even broader issues, multicultural issues, etc. I have just one that I brought along here called Discover the World that I'll leave out here for people to take a look at. And then secondly, to say just a little bit about a really exciting Lutheran Peace Fellowship project that's summarized in this sheet here. It's a curriculum on violence and conflict resolution for high schools. It was started 3 years ago, and I've sort of brought it into LPF, and LPF has become a major player in a coalition of groups working on it. A couple of the subsidiary pieces are the article that I quoted from earlier today, and then one of a variety of bibliographies. This one is designed for parents. We do quite a few workshops for parents and teachers and so forth. We will be adding and actually replacing one of the video or television pieces with that resource there that publishes the newspaper or the magazine that's coming around, rather, Media and Values, and the videos there. It's a very, very impressive project. And then finally, just a general piece about LPF. I would really love to have to invite you to join LPF as a vehicle for continuing both this discussion, but also supporting projects within our community, the Lutheran community, to engage this issue and to do something about it. The curriculum has been used in more than 24 classrooms. We're producing a kind of a smaller piece of it for youth groups of 5 or so of the elements of it, but it's really taught us a lot about the connections between violence, not just the international, but also the intercultural, the interethnic violence, the community, and finally interpersonal levels. And to be a part of a project that really integrates that, and that has gotten a tremendous amount of response from media and educators and so forth, precisely because of that, it's one of its real strengths. I think it's something to really be proud of that we're taking the lead in working on. So. And I, too, would be really delighted to talk with people over the next days and or right afterwards to continue the discussion